I wake up every day after I've carved this path from the bedroom to the coffee maker, and I'm 100% sure, and I want you to hear me, that everybody today is going to say yes to me. I'm 100% convinced. Now, we know what happens. Not everybody says yes, but that's okay, right? But you're going to start with yes.
I'm Michael Chernow, and this is the Creatures of Habit podcast. Our habits will make us or break us. It's just that simple. I've lived on both sides of the tracks and have learned that the decisions we make on a consistent basis truly define who we are as human beings. On this show, I will be interviewing some of the most inspiring, motivating, and high-performing humans I've encountered to share their daily habits, routines, and rituals that help them stay on top of their game and ultimately happy. So sit back, relax, and pay attention, because what you hear over the next 30 to 45 minutes could potentially change your life. Let's go. What up, guys? Welcome back to the Creatures of Habit podcast. Yes. Today is the motherfucking day. Ooh. Today's the day. Kicking off with some swearing. I got a guest that I am beyond excited to share with you all. He is a legend. He's an icon. He's one of the world's most famous and best athletes ever to walk the planet. His name is Lance Armstrong. You know him. He doesn't need much of an intro. But he's become a friend of mine, and I'm really excited to have him on the show to talk about habits, rituals, and routines. Plus, because obviously when you get a guest like Lance on the show, you want to be able to dig in a little bit more than just understanding what makes this man tick. And we're going to find out what makes him tick for sure. But he's done so much. He's done so much in his life. Cycling obviously is a massive part of his life, but he's also raised hundreds of millions of dollars, which I think is something, you know, arguably as, if not more accomplished than cycling, raising hundreds of millions of dollars for cancer research, cancer support. I think over $300 million he's raised with Livestrong, right?
500, but who's counting?
$500 million. Yeah. Lance, welcome to the
Thank
show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to be here.
So we're in your house.
Yeah.
We're in your house. We got a pretty epic epic setup here. And I've been kicking your ass for the last 2 days.
You have been. That's everything you just said is true.
You know, I got to say, like, it's been fun working out, but it's really been fun beating the shit out of an athlete like you. It's just,
yeah, I will pull out my birth certificate if I have to. I mean, I'm not, you know, I kind of joke around with you that, you know, take it easy on the scrawny cyclist. I mean, you know what we were like. My body has, you know, throughout my athletic career, right, going all the way back to 12, 13 years old, I started as a swimmer. So I had, you know, I actually have a much bigger upper body and carry a lot more weight than all the guys I raced with, just because I had this swimmer body from a very young age, and then straight into triathlons, and just, you know, had a big back, big chest.
Yeah, you got a trunk, dude. You've got a trunk.
So that's not common in cyclists. And so I was, you know, I would have to try to whittle this thing down and be as skinny as possible. But at the end of the day, I'm still a scrawny 52-year-old cyclist. So if you want to, you know, run around and tell everybody how you kick the shit out of some scrawny 52-year-old cyclist, you know, go for it.
How many people can say, fuck a 52-year-old cyclist? How many people can say that they kicked the shit out of Lance Armstrong? How many?
One is too many.
I wanted to kick off with a couple of just spitfires because I think it's fun.
Yeah, great.
Biggest pet peeve.
It's your show. Biggest pet peeve.
I know you got a lot of them.
I do have a lot. I don't know if it's, I'm not a big fan of small talk. Small talk just kind of grinds on me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a lot of patience either. I've tried to, you know, control that a little bit through the years. I mean, we could do an entire show on my pet peeves. You know, somebody, you know, driving the speed limit in the left lane. I don't know. I mean, it's but I struggle with small talk. If I know I have to go to an event and it's like a networking thing, and you know it's just going to be this sort of inch deep stuff, I'm like, ugh.
People ask, what's your favorite animal? I'm not going to ask that. I'm going to ask you, if you were an animal, what would you be?
Oh, man, you're asking some right out of the gate here, Michael. By the way, these are not things that I ever think about. Like, there's never been at one point in my life where I thought to myself, if I were an animal.
That's what I'm asking.
I know. It would. I mean, it has to be. Look, I mean, I've, I've lived the life I've lived. It has to be some, you know, some animal you would see on a safari. I don't know if that's a, you
just know, say it, fucking lion. Just say it.
Well, I don't know if it's a lion. You know, it's I don't know, but it's something like that. It, you know what it is? It's, and I don't know too much about animals and safari animals and African animals, but I will tell you this. It's an animal that ain't afraid to go hunting, and it's certainly an animal that will do anything to protect its family. 100%. So whatever that animal is, that's me.
Copy that.
Yeah.
Good answer. Favorite place to visit?
Look, we travel a lot, so I love going to the beach. We go to the beach a lot, so it's not necessarily a special experience just because we're, you know, it's our go-to. I love the south of France. Mm. Like I lived there when I, and you heard what I said. I mean, I love France. Like people think I have this acrimonious relationship with the country of France, the people of France. It couldn't be further from the truth. Like when I get to France, I'm like, this is fucking amazing. Like I love it here. I love the people, love the food, love the lifestyle and the riding. And if you take it a step further and you're like, where's your favorite place to ride? Like the south of France, assuming you know where you're going, which I do, is the best ride in the world.
Just because of the views or?
Well, there are great views, but there is what's very mountainous. Mm-hmm. So behind Nice and Monaco, if you just went straight back inland, nothing but mountains. It's never flat. So there's that. And they, for whatever reason, they have a lot of roads. They've got little tiny roads. They've got small roads. They've got medium roads. They've got, so you have tons of options. Like nobody wants to ride, at least I don't want to ride the same road all the time. You can totally mix it up and you just kind of get buried and lost back there. And you're like, you know, you're like running low on water. Like, oh shit, I'm going to stop in this village. Mm-hmm. You know, when we were training, if you've been to Europe or those listening have been to Europe, you know, in the middle of the village, there's something kicking out water and you're like, I mean, we would drink that water, right? The village, the people that live in that village would drink. They'd fill up huge jugs. That would be their water. Love it, dude. Love it. I'd go back. I mean, if I had one of those time machines or those machines to get you somewhere fast, I'd leave right now.
Any particular place in the south of France? Like any particular
town? Well, we lived in Nice. So we lived in a little, so you know, between Nice and Monaco, so it goes Villefranche, and then you have a very, really cool peninsula called Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat. So we lived in Cap-Ferrat. And then you get to Beaulieu, then you get to Ez, and then you get to Monaco, mm-hmm. Which we would not go into. Monaco is like New York City, right? It's congested. There's high rises everywhere.
You'd smell the money.
It's a lot of dough. Sometimes you would ride through Monaco. The other cool thing is if you just go a little past Monaco, that's the Italian border. So you can cross the border. And then everything I just described about the climbs and the roads behind France, you can also get in Italy, and you can tie them together. There's little border crossings way up in the mountains. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, you ride for, the coast is crowded, but once you get off the coast, you do not see another car. I remember I won the tour in 2000. Of course, the Olympics were in 2000 in Sydney, so I took a little time off, and I was trying to get everything going again for the Olympics. And I was out there. I was in the middle of nowhere, and I just was so used to not seeing anybody. I would kind of shave the corners a little bit. The roads are very technical, very twisty, and I'm coming downhill and I'm too far on the inside. Well, sure enough, as fate has it, a car coming the other way just nailed me.
Oh shit.
Caught the front corner of the car, actually broke a little vertebra in my neck. And I was just, and I remember saying, and they stopped, but I remember thinking, well, I'll just wait, you know, for the next car. It never came.
Oh shit.
Yep. Hour and a half later, no. So I finally made my way anyways. But that's how quiet and peaceful and just like, I don't like riding with cars. I don't trust cars. I don't want to be around cars. And this is in 2000 when you had, you know, not everybody was looking at their Instagram while they're driving their car.
Mm, that was fun.
Oh, I'd go back riding. It is so fun.
So like a bike ride for you in those days, just a ride that you're going to go out and take.
Yeah.
What kind of time are you putting on the road?
You know, there's, an easy day would be 2 hours. I mean, an easy day could be a full rest day. Those were not that common, but you know, an easy day is 90 minutes, you know, but a long day is 8 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's just a, that, and is that a full training day?
Or that's that, it. That's it. That's your whole day. I mean, I mean, this whole show is about habit. I mean, I was very big, into habit and as I said at the top of the show, we had to be as light as possible. So how did we, in our minds, and this was just a mathematical equation, right? This is your output. This is your input, AKA what you're eating, what you're consuming. So I had it engineered so that I would, you know, not wake up at any particular time, whenever, you know, I probably got up at 8 or 9 and have a little breakfast, and I would leave it, you know, call it, even if it was, say it was a 6-hour day, say you left at 11, mm-hmm. you get home at 5. So you've missed lunch, right? You might've had a little bit to eat on the bike, but you've skipped a full sit down lunch, yeah. right? So your input's coming down. I'd have a little protein shake, get a massage, and just make it to dinner, starving. And then have dinner and then kind of just chill and go to bed.
So at that time, did you have someone taking care of all your nutrition, or were you on it yourself?
It depends. Those early years, we did it ourselves. And as the tours started to stack up, then the support and the people around, I had more help, right? So whether it's, you know, those latter years, we had a chef, I had a follow car. So this idea of, and that's maybe why I'm so freaked out now, because I just ride by myself and I'm like, where's the fucking car behind me? Like, mm-hmm. what if somebody just runs me over? Dave, who you've met. I mean, when I was training here in the Hill Country, and Dave Bolch has driven more of the Hill Country than, you know, probably from here to the moon, right? So just constantly the car behind, whether it's just shielding you or anything you need, get a flat tire, boom, wheel change, no wasting time, right? Food, drinks, everything right there.
So, you know, when I think about endurance, and you're the pinnacle of endurance, right? I mean, you're the output is intense. I would imagine an 8-hour day or a 6-hour day. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine what the caloric, you know, output is.
Well, you don't go that hard. I mean, you can't go that. I mean, nobody goes out and goes hard for 8 hours. You'd have to be.
But 8 hours in the seat, no matter how you look at it, you're probably burning somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 calories, I would imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some days are harder. Some days the work is more specific. And we never looked at miles, right? It wasn't like I have to ride, you know, 120 miles today. It was all about time and all about vertical climbing. So vertical feet, we call it vert, mm-hmm. right? So on a day like that, you'd get, you know, 15,000 feet of climbing. Even in 6 hours, you could get 15,000 feet of climbing. And when it's that hilly and constantly hilly, you can't accumulate miles because you're going uphill most of the time.
Are you ever on those rides? Are you ever listening to music?
No. Never. Never. I mean, I do now occasionally. You have to be a little careful. Even when I mountain bike and you're not worried about cars typically. I mean, if you're on single track and they're bi-directional, right? You want to hear if somebody's, that's the last thing you want is two people listening to music, one person going up, the other one coming down.
Yeah.
That's not good. So when I run, I listen to music. But when I ride, I kind of like to have all my senses up.
Can you recall a conversation? Because I would imagine you'd have a ton of conversations with yourself on those rides.
Yeah.
You know, I can imagine. I mean, I would love to just hear what it sounds like in Lance Armstrong's right. head 4 hours in
yeah, I know. On a day. And I miss it. God, I miss it. By the way, it's a long time ago too, you know. I mean, it's I don't know how people sort of frame up this idea of time and memories and put it all into, I think time plays tricks on people, mm-hmm. right? And we can all, you know, whatever we timestamp, right? Whether it's COVID or, you know, my controversies or my friend. I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, my first tour win this summer will be 25 years ago. Think about that.
Yeah.
That I can remember that day or those days like it was yesterday.
I mean, how did you do? That was 95.
99.
99 was the first tour.
99 to 05.
And so that first tour, like what was, you know, when we were on a run yesterday, I'd asked you.
Who got their ass kicked on that run?
I definitely got my ass kicked on that run.
A little credit.
Definitely got my ass kicked on that run. But I asked you, you know, did you know you were going to win?
Yeah.
And you said after the first one.
Right. Well, the first, yeah, of course. Yeah.
So what was, so like, how did the conversation change? And then we're going to get into habits because I want everybody to know what goes on in your head, you know, for ticking. But how did the conversation change from 99 to 2000?
Well, 99, we didn't know. I mean, I had never competed for the, I mean, I had ridden the tour, but I had won stages in the tour, but never competed for what we call the GC, right? The overall. But the year before that, which was my first year back, I got fourth in the Tour of Spain, which is another 3-week tour, really hard tour. You know, typically if, you know, you finish like that, you know, you could compete in another Grand Tour, including the Tour de France. So we had this idea like, look, and our team sucked, right? We had no other options at the tour. So it's not that the team sucked, but we certainly didn't have, maybe we did suck. We didn't have ambitions for the overall. So the idea was, look, let's just go. You just got fourth in the Tour of Spain year before. Let's build the team around you to try to get whatever it is. And by the way, if a rider or a team gets top 10 in the tour, that tour is a success. Mm-hmm. So the things, you know, if you win a stage, it's a success for the entire team for the whole 3 weeks. If a rider places in the top 10, it's a success. So could we get in the top 10? Now, and I had been riding good before that, so we knew we could do better than that. But you don't know, right? I didn't know. I didn't know how I would last over 3 weeks and you know, ended up winning the tour. But after that, man, I was sure. Like and we'd have guys, I'll never forget, we had this really amazing Spanish kid come on the team. His name was Jose Luis Rubiera. He's from Asturias, which is a really cool part of Spain. And his nickname was Chechu. And everybody, like, this was not your normal Spanish guy. Mm-hmm. He spoke perfect English. Like, he's fucking, like, all these guys we raced with are like kids that barely got out of high school. Chechu was like, you know, taking night, you know, classes during races. And I'm like, whoa, like nobody does that. Chechu was, but he comes to the team and his English was good. And we were at the training camp in January. Mm. The race is in July. And somehow it came up. We were on a ride, we're riding side by side. And it came up like, how would it, you know, what about the tour? And I said, and I looked at him and I said, I guarantee you I'm winning. And now this guy's, he's a seasoned guy. Like, this wasn't just some random kid that came out. He had come from great teams, and this was a big hire for us. I'll never forget his face. He was like, how can anybody say that? How can you know that? I said, I fucking promise you, I'm winning. I thought he was going to fall off his bike. Like, it was.
So, I mean, I hear that, and the conviction that you say that with, I believe. You know, I think, I wonder if it was coming off the back of a win, or if it was you're the kind of guy that is just not going to stop until you get the job done.
And we know how to get the job done. Like, we knew exactly at that point, after that first year, we had this template for training, how you build the season, how you compose the team, any kind of technical changes we had to make, you know, with the bikes or whatever. I knew it.
You knew it.
Yeah.
You knew it.
Now, there's, you know, you can say those things and we can talk about those things. It's the Tour de France. It's 3 weeks. There's 200 guys on the road. Some guy falls over in front of you and you can't stop and you go over him and you break your collarbone. I don't care what you said in January. You're out of the race. Mm-hmm. Right? So that can happen. Or, you know, some weird stomach bug, right? The day before the first big mountain stage, you're out.
How important do you think it is to go into something like that with the mentality that you had, though? Like, how do you think that?
Well, I don't think anybody else had that mentality.
You don't?
No, absolutely not.
I think that right, right there is the difference.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten to, you know, be close with a lot of these guys, primarily my number one rival the whole time. So I know him. I mean, I felt like I knew him when we raced. I know him a lot better now. He just doesn't think that way. He's not wired that way. I mean, his name is Jan Ulrich. He's a big German guy and hugely talented, like had all the gifts, more gifts than me, more talent than me, more potential than me. And just as I know him now, I mean, he's just like, we'll see how it goes. Whereas, I mean, I can't imagine saying, well, let's just see how it goes. No, fuck that. We're going to be the way it goes.
You knew it.
Full stop.
Interrupting this episode to share with you how we keep this podcast going, and that is by you supporting us through trying out or subscribing to Meal One on creaturesofhabit.com. I am giving a 20% discount on your first order or your first subscription order, which is a serious discount. Meal One is a superfood meal. It is a blend of gluten and glyphosate-free oats. It is packed with 30 grams of plant-based protein, omega-3 fatty acids, a probiotic, digestive enzymes, vitamin D3. It also has chia seeds, flax seeds, pumpkin seeds, and a little bit of pink Himalayan salt. There are 37 grams of healthy carbohydrates and anywhere from 7 to 10 grams of fat, depending on the flavor. You will be full for hours, people. I promise you, we developed Meal One to help you perform at your absolute best, to get that incredibly healthy and convenient edge on the competition. There is not a better, more convenient meal to start your day with or use as a pre- or post-workout meal. The macros are perfect and sourced with the cleanest ingredients in the game. Take your performance to the next level. Make your life much easier by saving time. Be able to eat healthy without sacrificing flavor, and all while staying full for hours, making your urge to snack far, far less. Hop over to creaturesofhabit.com. That is creaturesofhabit.com. And use promo code KOHPOD, the number 20, for your first order of Meal One today. Back to the pod.
Way smaller scale, but when I was doing some, you know, bodybuilding competitions, and my coach would always say to me, he'd be like, "We're not going to compete, dude. We're not going to compete. Like, I wouldn't coach you if you were going to compete. You're going to win, period. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, we've done our job. And if it doesn't happen, we failed, you know? And that was like, for me, you know, I think that really was the edge that I had, where I wasn't like walking into these things thinking that I was going to go and compete with other guys. I wanted to go in, and I had this mentality where I was just like, if I'm not going to win, I'm not fucking going, mm-hmm. you know? And obviously Tour de France and some rinky dink bodybuilding competition in New England. But I think that is a powerful, and I also think that obviously there's optimism, right, in that way of thinking, but I think it comes through confidence. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And the Creatures of Habit podcast is a podcast that is built on, at the end of the day, habits right. will either fucking make you or break you.
Right.
There's good habits and bad habits. Yep. And
we had great habits.
You had great habits. So I want to know about those habits, but something that I think is important to relay to the listeners is like consistency is the habit, mm-hmm. right? And then consistency ultimately leads to confidence. Mm-hmm. And then confidence, the ramification of confidence is courage. The end of it all, it's that courage component
right.
that is going to get you over the hump.
Yep.
You know? And so I want to talk about your habits. I want to talk about your habits then and now.
Yeah.
But what? Walk us through a morning at the peak of your career.
Look, the reality, and I will not deny it. I really miss it. It will never happen again. The reality is that life was extremely simple. Extremely simple. We did not move around. You didn't go have dinners with friends and other families and double dates. You didn't take vacations. You didn't, it was very simple, and we kept it simple, right? You had one fucking job: stay healthy, get fit, train every day, eat good, go to bed. You didn't have to stop and fly to, you know, let's imagine you're an actor or whatever. You have to fly to LA and do a junket and like tour. There was none of that shit. It was we were super and comfortable, right? But we just stayed in one place. We would leave to go to races, right? You do 40-ish race days before the tours. You go to those races, come right back and just stay home. It's amazing, right? And you went to bed. I went to bed. The very first tour, 1999, I went to bed, because this is going to sound a little late, but so the stages in the tour don't start till noon, right? So they don't start at 9 a.m. Mm-hmm. We always wanted to be done eating or sort of, you know, having breakfast 3 hours before. So that's 9. By the time you get done with the races, massage, have dinner, et cetera, I would go to bed every night at midnight, and I would sleep straight through till 9. Don't get up. I would never get up. And we talked earlier about, like, I love sleep. I feel like I'm like the king of sleep. But all of those tours, no matter how much stress there was about, you know, there were plenty of controversy, things that, you know, headlines and scoops and things that you would think would keep you up, or stress of, you know, 4 mountain passes the next day. Fuck that. I went to bed every night at midnight and I got up at 9 a.m. I walked down to the breakfast.
Straight through. Never up to pee, nothing.
Nope. And in those years, you know, cycling's kind of bush league. So there's, in those years we had 9 guys on the team. Most guys have a roommate, right? So, but we're, that 9 is an odd number. So I always had my own room. Nobody was fucking with me. I wasn't fucking with anybody else. And I just, man, I stayed in my lane, stuck to my habits and my patterns and slept.
So, I mean, we're, you know.
That's the best habit that I've ever, and the strongest habit I've ever had throughout my entire life.
There has to be something that you do or some conscious decision that you make in order to get that straight, whether it's 8 or 9 hours.
I don't know. It's great. Like,
there's got to be something.
The only thing I know, and I joke about it, but I mean, when I see a pillow, I'm already start. Like, I know. I'm like, okay, we're shutting down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I see the pillow, and my wife hates me. Like when I check my latency, for example, on the Oura Ring, the average is 3 or 4 minutes, which can be good, can be bad, right? Mm-hmm. There are plenty of folks, which I also subscribe to, that say that could be bad. That means you're so exhausted that you just have to go to sleep. But let's say you're in a state where everything's cranking, you're fully healthy, and you're just going to sleep. 3 or 4 minutes latency, which, by the way, for those who don't know, latency is the time that, you know, whatever device it is you're wearing tells you that's how long it took you to actually fall asleep.
Right.
That's, I mean, think about it. I could hold my breath for 3 minutes. That's fucking no time, right? Pretty well. Like,
you and I have that in common. My latency is always off the chart.
Yeah.
I, unfortunately, and I think it probably has to do a lot with the fact that I drink just probably too much liquid. I wake up once a night, every night to pee.
Yeah, and I do now. I do now. But that might have to do with,
mm-hmm.
you know, all that stuff. All that plumbing changes as you get in your 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So you didn't do anything specific in the morning. Or once you got up, what did the first 10 minutes of your morning look like?
Nothing. Just walk down to breakfast. Drink coffee. As soon as I got down there, I have a cup of coffee, start eating.
What does your morning look like now?
Same thing.
It's
very same thing. Yeah. Like, look, we're sitting in the house, right? I that's my bedroom. I mean, you could, I'm going to wear a path. We just moved into this house, but when it's all said and done, there will be a path worn for me walking out of that bedroom, hang in the corner, right around the kitchen island, straight to the coffee maker. I stand there, make my coffee. And then there's going to be another path that goes right over here. And if it's chilly out, like it has been, I turn on the fire. And I sit in that seat, and you can see. See that book that's on the corner of the couch?
Uh-huh.
Right? That book is there because that's where I set my coffee. Because I don't want to risk, like, you know, a sloppy sip that's just dripping down and it gets on your nice new couch. So I have that book there. So I set my and there's no risk that it'll kind of wobble around.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I set my coffee on that, and I sit there, and, you know, I have tried to be better, and I know you've talked about this. I've heard you talk about it. I mean, most folks probably look at their phone before they have coffee. I don't do that. Most folks pour that cup of coffee and start looking at their phone. So I tried to be better about that. I'm not great about that. I mean, in a perfect world, fuck, if you just sat there for 5 minutes and listened to that fire and sipped on your coffee, that's a much better way to kind of, it's only 5 minutes, much better way to get going. Now there are days I woke up thinking about something, I'll go straight in, right? Whether it's email or, you know, some news item or whatever. But this is it right here. Boom, boom, boom. Every day.
I was on a podcast. It's got to be 2.5, 3 years ago. This guy, Jay Ferrugia. He's got his own podcast. He's got a cool podcast. And he shared something with me that was really, I think about it often. And basically his philosophy is until 12 o'clock in the afternoon, he is not playing any kind of defense. He is playing strictly offense. Mm-hmm. Every action he takes is proactive.
Mm-hmm.
And he's pushing the ball down the field every single day from the minute he wakes up until noon. Because in his mind, he's like, once I start this, I've given all my power away. Mm. Now my power is here. Now I'm, you know, I'm now on offense. On defense, because, man, I'm looking at the thing. Somebody, I get a text. Yeah. I get, now I'm just playing. I'm playing defense.
Now they're swinging.
Now they're swinging.
Right.
And you know.
And you get tired. I mean, I suffer from. I get up early, right? So if you get up, I mean, I think an average time for me is probably 6 a.m. I mean, 6 to 12 is 6 hours. I mean. You start, you know, if you've worked out and you've played offense, you know, you start to get a little tired, right? So then, I mean, it'd be hard to play offense for 12 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
But if the device, that's a whole, I've never thought of it that way. I struggle with technology because I have kids, and I hate the fact that I've seen all these fucking documentaries, you know, Social Dilemma and all these things. And I saw Zuckerberg testifying on Capitol Hill yesterday, just getting hammered, right? Like with the what you're doing to our children, all these Bobo politicians up there, like bipartisan, like basically going, you should go to jail, Zuck, right? That's what they were acting like. Of course, they're not going to do anything. So I hate that. I fucking hate it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, we're living in 2024, right? Something fucked up or bad happens to me or me or my family or anybody I love, I'd rather live in 2024 than 1924.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, we got to deal with this fucking thing, this supercomputer we carry around. But anything super bad happens, I don't know what, but the chances of fixing...
What would you do?
Well, I'm just saying we have, you know, the technology that exists today and how we have evolved as, I mean, whether it's medicine or transportation or longevity, it doesn't matter. Like we're in a better... So. You have to take the good with the bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, I thought you were saying, what would I do if I lived in 1924?
No, I'm saying, what would you like, you know, if you had, I mean, I you were thinking about getting into politics, right?
No, it was no.
No?
I mean, a lot of people thought about that for me, but yeah. I had already lived a while. And it's even worse now, right? So, but even back then, I knew enough to know that I didn't want anybody going and digging around in my life,
mm-hmm.
if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did.
They did. Well, it turns out they did, but they weren't interested in the parts that I was thinking about. They were, yeah. You're right. They did, which is fine.
So I don't feel like there's a lot of positivity floating around these days. I just don't. I don't feel like there's a lot of positivity floating around. I feel like anytime you see something of that's newsworthy, right, it's propaganda.
Yeah.
Or you know, it's negative. It's just negative.
Right.
It's just negative. And
we have gotten ourselves to that place. We just have, right? I mean, think about, if we're going to talk about the news, right? Think about how people got their news over the course of the last 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
You can go even before that. I don't know when the first TV set started landing in America's living room, but you can even go before that, right? They got news from the radio, right? It was some radio signal, and they were getting, it was just, this is the news, right? Michael Chernow is wearing a white hoodie and a white hat, right? And he's got a 4-day beard. That's it. It wasn't like, looks like he hasn't washed it in a while. No, but no one know about the hat. Be better if he shaved, right? So it went from that to television to network television. Then you only had three options. And then you had a fourth, and then you had cable news. And so then you had the internet. Then you had, you know, blogs and Reddit and that, you name it, right? So it got so competitive that people are like, we can't all just say that's a white hoodie, that's a white hat, and he hasn't shaved in 4 days. We can't all say that.
Mm-hmm.
We can't all just give the facts.
Boring.
That would be boring.
Mm-hmm.
So we gotta spice this up a little bit. Well, CNN said, you know, they did comment on the beard, so I'm going to go ahead and go a step further and comment on, you know, it just got, and I try to, you know, I do less of it now, but when I watch cable news, I kind of watch them all. But whereas historically I just watched CNN and MSNBC, I would never watch Fox.
Mm-hmm.
But now I watch them all. I'm like, I got to listen to all this shit. You know what's happened? Here's the end result. I fucking hate them all. Like I can't stand any of them.
I'm with you. We got locked in the pandemic when it first kicked off. Like everybody else, we were all glued, right? We were all glued. And like you, I was like CNN, MSNBC guy. Full transparency. I hate them both. Yeah. I hate Fox and CNN.
Yeah.
I really do. Yeah, it's all, I feel like I'm getting fed a bunch of bullshit constantly.
Right. Well, but then you go back to, you know, you can, you all listening or are watching or paying attention. I mean, you can go look on YouTube, go pull up Walter Cronkite giving the news and not the nightly news in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we've come from, right? So now you got these people, you know, these slingers on there that are like, Walter Cronkite ain't never coming back. And it has enabled, I mean, this, look at our whole system and look at, I mean, here we're going to be, without getting political, speaking of politics, I mean, look at our two choices we're going to have in 2024. I mean, this is the United States of America. This is, okay.
We're in trouble.
No, but hold on. This is the USA. So we're going to ask everybody, we're going to look around this whole fucking country, and these are our two best choices?
What did I do? I kicked off with this idea that, you know, it's not good stuff all no. You know, across the board.
No, but here's the thing, and I you know, we know each other kind of well, not, we're going to know each other a lot better, but I think we have similar beliefs and a similar approach to this. In that you can't go crazy watching these things. You can't obsess about, wow, these are the only two guys we get to pick from. That sucks. Where I go, and I have to, I'm going to venture to guess you think the same way. Like, my job is, I am a politician, right? I'm an administrator. I'm a facilitator. Here's my job. My job, right? My wife is right in there. My two kids are at school. My elder three, two in college, one in Paris, right? We got the dog. I got a job, is to govern this family.
Yeah.
That's my job, right? So, yeah, this shit's crazy on the news or in the New York Times or whatever. But at the end of the day, I know that shit's fucked up. But the one thing that cannot be fucked up is the governor of this house,
right,
or the president of this house, or the mayor of this house, whatever you want, the king of the house. It doesn't matter what you call it. So I'm like, all right, that's weird, but, you know, try to be a good mayor of this house.
I want to move into a different topic. I think you and I share something similar, a lot of things similar, but one thing that I think you and I have a lot of experience with is pain in general, all kinds of different.
Love it.
Yeah. One of the first things I noticed when we were working out yesterday was I was sitting under the bar, and we were doing a pretty nasty workout, and the first thing I saw on the barbell was suffering.
Yeah.
And I was like, my kind of guy.
Yeah.
Pain for me has become a prerequisite,
yeah,
to anything, yeah, great.
Yeah.
Right? It's just part of that. So I want to talk about some real pain for you. Like, I would love to hear about the pain cave on the bike, because I would, mm-hmm, love to hear how you lean into that and how that can be translated into other areas of life. But why don't you just walk us through what it feels like to climb for 30 minutes, and you just know that lactic acid in your quads is just on fire, like, yeah, truly on fire.
Well, look, it's not always the same, right? January pain is very different than July pain, as it should be, right? January pain, you're coming out of the off season, you're 10 extra pounds, you haven't been riding, you go out and you're trying to get the season started, like that kind of pain. I don't want any, you have to push through that and get through it. I don't want any of that. Like, that sucks. Right, I'm not going to ever say that's amazing. I loved the pain today. Fuck that, I hated it. But as the months got closer and closer to that magic month of July, like, that pain just, it evolved, right? And it, you know, weird. It felt different. There was less of it. You knew how to get right to that point. I mean, you talk about lactic acid. I mean, I could get it, and I had a sort of a natural gift, you know, God-given or whatever, through training or all of the above, with my relationship with lactic acid. I just didn't, I mean, the spoiler alert is I didn't produce a ton, and when I did produce a ton, I could clear it very quickly. So I could find that place where you're just like, okay, here we are. Like, I feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hurting, but I can do this a long time. And I'm going to do this longer than anybody else here. And if they accelerate or they surge and I have to follow, so my lactate is going to go up, that's okay. I'm going to sit there. I'm going to recover. Mine's going to come down a lot quicker than yours. So have at it. But January pain, different than July. But I just loved, like, I you know, You can ask my teammates. Like, we would go, there was always two rest days during the tour. Some guys would just lay in bed. Not our team, but other teams would just lay in bed. Other teams would just go out and spin the legs. I said, boys, fuck that. We're going hard. We're going hard every day, right? And not because I wanted to be hard on them, but my belief, and I actually think I'm right, is that you can't do something that hard for 3 weeks and then have these days. The body will be like, wait, are we done? Mm. We're just going to lay in bed today? I mean, and you saw it time and time again, guys coming out of the rest days just flat. So the team will tell you, like, we hated Lance Armstrong on the rest days. Like, I was like, no, we're going to go out and we're going to fucking hammer. We don't need to go for 5 hours, but we're going to go for 2 hours hard. I'm attacking. Let's go. They just, a little crosswind, put some boys in the gutter. I don't give a shit. Like, we just, it was just the way we did it. And loved every second of that. But back to the bar and back to suffer. I mean, I think suffering is, I mean, it sounds hokey, but I can't imagine a life without suffering.
Mm-hmm.
In any form, physical, emotional. Like, we're always pushing ourselves. I mean, we just kind of came up with, I think JB, actually, we made the first, we're like, because we love the letter U. So I was making plays with we do is W-E-D-U. We would always play with this letter U and the icon above it. And I'm like,
why U?
So any word with a U, like suffer. So I was thinking about other words, like what other word has a U? And I'm like, oh, suffer.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fucking great word. Amazing word. So we would brand that word and we put it everywhere. And so then when I built out the gym, and shout out to the folks at Rogue, like, did a fucking bang up job of the dopest gym I've ever had.
Rogue, I'm waiting for you.
Yeah. Right. Subtle. Michael has serious envy over my gym, but you know, the custom bars, the suffer there, I'm not training for anything. Like, people ask me, they see me train, like, wow, what are you training for? Nothing. I had nothing. We got nothing. I got nothing on my calendar. I'm not training for shit. Like, whoa, sure. There's only one reason, right? It's just, you just want to go suffer, right? And that's it. When I go swim, I swim right here in the neighborhood with the Masters team. And I love swimming. It's my favorite sport, really, outside of golf. But man, when I get in that pool, and swimming's different because there you really are alone. Like, you're staring at a black line. You're not talking. Certainly not listening to music. You know, you're doing designated workouts with sets. And so there's little breaks. So you get the directions from the coach, but you're basically underwater 80% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, like, when I get in the pool, I go, I'm not training for a swim meet or anything. Like, I just love to go.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people of all ages, Michael Chernow here, founder of Creatures of Habit and the host of this very dear podcast. Nightcap is a sleep support elixir. It is delicious. It is like a cup of hot chocolate when you were a child. It is made of zero THC, CBD, L-theanine, GABA, magnesium, reishi mushroom, ashwagandha, a little lion's mane, so you wake up chipper. It's also got chamomile flower extract. It is the bomb. All the ingredients have been scientifically studied to help you relax, fall, and stay asleep. To learn more about it, hop over to creaturesofhabit.com and hit the sleep tab in the nav bar to learn more. I'm so, so, so excited for you guys to try Nightcap. It is the bomb.
I am giving a 20% discount on your first order, or your first subscription order, which is a serious discount. And use promo code KOHPOD, the number 20, for your first order. Back to the pod.
So we touched on the actual pain, physical pain. You've also been through a lot of shit, yeah. Right? You've yeah. You're a cancer survivor.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to ask you about what that feeling was, or what that first thought was when that doc told you that morning that you got cancer and
yeah.
It's not looking good. But also, you took a lot of scrutiny, right, in your career, right? I mean, that was, I would imagine.
That's just an understatement.
Yeah, right? You just took, you put yourself in a fucking really tough spot.
Yeah, all self-inflicted.
So pain is like a big part of Lance Armstrong.
Yeah. Yes, pain and suffering, but also just this endless, eternal sense of optimism. Like, I never, when that, when...
I'm so happy. I'm so happy you said that.
Yeah.
I'm like, so fucking happy you said that.
And I can elaborate. I can speak for hours about this. But, you know, when Dr. Reeves walked into his office October 2nd, 1996, and he laid it all out there, put the chest x-ray up on the light, I saw it. I was like, oh, fuck, this guy's, I mean, and then, you know, 20 years later, I also stood in a room where, and I had to put my hands up and said, they got me. Hands are up. I surrender. I mean, that day I was like, he's got me. Like, he's not wrong. And then he tells me we're going to have surgery. And then this started this process. I mean, I was just like, man, just like you with your son. You're like, I'm going to fucking figure this out. Like, and this is 1996 in Austin, Texas. There was no internet. There were no cell phones. There was no access to information. Like, you're in the dark. This fucking guy just said, you have cancer and, you know, you got a coin flip chance of life. I mean, you're like, what? And you have surgery in the morning? Like, but I was like, all right, we're going to fucking figure this out, right?
That's what you thought.
Yeah.
Immediate. Yeah,
of course, but it's a long process. I'm not going to ever say or claim that there were moments or there weren't moments where I was like, oh no, this is bad. Like, I might not. You have to have these moments where you're like, hey, this may not work out. Mm. Now, there were not many of those. I mean, maybe I was wired that way. My mother was always that way. My mom overcame tons of shit. I mean, she had me at 17. The whole world was like, you're not having that baby. And she says, you're fucking damn right I am. It was like, you're crazy. You're a little, you know, rat kid with having a kid, having a baby. Like, she said, yeah, watch me. Right? So, I think a lot of that was instilled, just this fight and this, you know, this attitude of never give up. I wake up every day after I've carved this path from the bedroom to the coffee maker, and I'm 100% sure, and I want you to hear me, that everybody today is going to say yes to me. I'm 100% convinced. Now, we know what happens. Not everybody says yes, but that's okay, right? But you're going to start with yes. You're going to start with yes. Because what's the alternative? You're gonna make that trek to the coffee machine, go sit down over there and go, everybody's going to say no to me today. Mm. What the fuck? Then just lay down. Give up. No, you have to believe that it is all green lights and everybody's going to say yes. And then as the answer starts to transition to no, you say, all right, I'm okay with that. And you start again. Right? But you have to start with yes. And there's... Look at my life. I mean, there's no way that I could have gotten up from a life-threatening illness. There's no way I could have gotten up from what I got up 11 years ago without waking up every day going, okay, this isn't ideal. This sucks, right? What are my priorities? Protect my family, hug my family, maintain my health, and start with yes. I'm fucking starting every day with yes. I'm going to get back then, 11 years ago, it was all, they were all no's, but that's okay. You go to bed, you reset, you wake up, and you start with yes. And I just did it over and over and over. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't all no's, right? Then you start getting more yeses, right? Then you talk about offense and defense. Then you're playing offense, right? Everybody wants to play offense, right? And the key is to play offense. But I also think the endurance piece has probably served me well. Like, I can just sit and I can sit in the shit for a while.
I kind of correlate it to, and this is what I say to my boys, there's only one thing that I will ever force my kids to do. And I'm battling with it right now. But I happen to be a New York Giants fan, right? And
okay. We can talk a lot about that.
The being a New York Giants fan is arguably one of the hardest things to do in my life.
But there's only one thing worse.
Tell me.
And that's being a Dallas Cowboys fan.
Oh, everybody hates the Dallas Cowboy fans.
Right, but when's the last time the Giants won the Super Bowl, right? They won
2008.
Okay, when's the last time the Dallas Cowboys... Back up. When is the last time America's team has won the Super Bowl?
I don't even know.
Try 1996.
But the one thing that I will say is that you guys always have a good season. And you guys always have a good run of games. Trying to raise two sons... with just loss after loss after loss is really hard. So what I tell the kids...
So tell them, you live in upstate New York, tell them to be a Bills fan. They're better than the Giants.
I can't do that. Okay. I wrote this massive newsletter 2 weeks ago to the community of Creatures of Habit, and I said, you never take off the jersey. You just can't take off the jersey. You can't. My son, his friends are Jets fans. And I'm like, buddy, I'm here to tell you that the Jets are no better than the Giants. All right, you're not stepping onto the winning team by going to the Jets. But the one thing that I will say, every Sunday, I don't give a fuck, and it's been part of my. And similar to you, like optimism is just I am blindly optimistic in some cases. I mean, you know, when it comes to business, I'm not like oblivious to shit going down. But every Sunday, I am confident that the Giants are going to win. It doesn't matter what happened last week.
Yeah. See, this is making no sense. Like this makes absolute.
I've got it, dude.
Let me tell you something. Save your optimism for something you can control. I don't fucking wake up any Sunday or if it's a Monday night game optimistic that the Cowboys are.
I do. What? I'm walking in.
Michael. You're wasting your optimism. You need to be optimistic
Endless pool of optimism. You can't waste it. You can't waste it. And I kind of...
I can't relate.
I have to... See, that might be where you and I are different.
Yeah.
I can't... Like, if I go into a Sunday football game thinking, man... Like, imagine this. The Cleveland Browns. They had the worst string of losses, you know, for years and years and years, up until just recently. They were the worst NFL team ever. Do you think for a second that the pregame locker room chant was, guys, just do your best not to lose, guys. Do your best not to lose, all right? We're not even going to say the word win. Just do your best not to lose. Because... That's all we got to do. Yeah. Just try not to lose. No, motherfuckers are in there being like, we are going to go out and give it every ounce of energy we got. And they got crushed every single time.
Right. Is this going somewhere? Because I have to be honest, I never think about what the Cleveland Browns were saying in their locker room. I just don't give a fuck. I grew up a Cowboys fan. I don't think about what they say, right? That's a sport that we all sit on a couch and watch. Like, the real game's right here. Yeah. This is the fucked Super Bowl, right? I wake up, you wake up, you wake. I know how you are already. Every day is a fucking Super Bowl for you, right? And whatever you say to yourself as you're prepping, right, for your day, that's it. That's what you're hearing.
Just stilling on the topic of pain, because I feel like every great thing that I've gone through, every lesson that I've learned has come out of some level of fear. You know, some level of fear and pain where I have learned now that going towards it is far easier than trying to stave it or run away from it.
Right.
So, and this is the last thing I want to talk about on this stuff, but I think it's important. When you were ready to make your decision and tell the world what happened, was it more painful before, and there's a point to this question, before you came out and said that, or after?
Oh, definitely after.
After.
Yeah, I was not. Look, we all have our own journeys and our own versions that we like to tell. I mean, there were plenty of we all did the same thing. I don't care what anybody says.
Yep.
Right? It just was what it wasn't. Nobody wanted it that way, just the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are versions, I couldn't live with this. And I just, you know, that wasn't me. I had no problem living with it at all. I went to the fucking knife fight. They whipped out the guns. I went to the gun store. I did what everybody did, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, not perfect, but I'm not losing any sleep over that. We all played the game. But there are different versions, you know, whether they're almost political answers that, you know, I just had to let the, you know, maybe that's their truth, but maybe not. Yeah, maybe that's something that sounds really good.
Mm-hmm.
So no, I mean, I didn't lay awake at night thinking about that.
Even right before when you had made the decision.
Oh, I mean, then after that, obviously everything came crashing down immediately. Right. So then you had to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I went from hero to zero overnight. I got sued by everybody and their dog. I had to navigate all that stuff. I had to figure out how to raise three of my kids at the time. We're in middle school. It's the worst time for kids. That's what I was worried about, right? But Yeah, I didn't. That may not be an answer that anybody likes, but I never struggled with that. Played the game the way it was played. Again, sucked. Wasn't what I signed up for. But here's the thing. I wasn't going home. I went over to do a job. I felt like I was put here to do that job. If the game changes, I'm going to change. I would have loved to go over there to do the job with all the God-given gifts that I have. And we all just eat bread and water. I'd have kicked their ass the same. It's fine. But the game changed. Yeah. And you know, that's, I'm leaving a part out that I shouldn't leave. I mean, that's, I think most people, and sitting here in 2024, can accept that, you know, how I evolved and grew into a man that was so vehemently combative and just wanted to defend myself, defend my sport, defend my charity, defend everything. That went too far. So that's the part where, you know, that's the part that got me, right? I think, yes, they get you on the technicality of, did you cross the line? Yes. Does everybody know that everybody crossed the line? Yes. So where is it that we now have the, you know, the green light or the approval to go after this guy? Look at the way he's acting. He's an easy guy to go after. That's the only reason they did it. But look, I'd said at the top of the show, self-inflicted. That's the part that's self-inflicted. So you don't ever look. I don't want to go back to being that guy. And that, you talk about pain. Thinking about that guy, you know, getting sued by all these people and getting forced to sit down and watch that guy. Like, I would never go watch that guy in my free time, nor would you or anybody probably, but being forced, you're like, wow, I said that? I acted that way? Fuck. Like, that is painful.
I said to you...
But also helpful.
So that's where I'm going with it.
Yeah, that's helpful. I mean, you... Look, I wouldn't change any of it.
That's what I was just getting.
Wouldn't
at.
Change any of it.
So I said to you the other day, you know, the guy that I was 20 years ago, like, you know, just terrible decisions, one after the next, just one after the next, in a different way, but just terrible decisions. Not proud of that guy. But the truth is, I needed to be that guy and go through that guy to get to the guy I am.
Right.
Right. It had to happen for me. And I do not have any regrets. I genuinely do not.
Right.
You know, and I hurt a lot of people. I definitely created a lot of, you know, I probably created trauma for people, and I've made amends to those people. But I really do believe that I needed to go through that shit. And I don't know, this might be woo-woo, right? But I do believe that there are certain people that are just dealt difficult hands, man. Whether it doesn't look like that on the outside, you know, there are things that show up in people's lives that are just challenging, right? Challenging one after the next. And I've like been one of those guys, you know, one of those guys. And so have you.
Yeah.
And so I assume no regrets.
No, I don't have any regrets now. And if you say it or I say it or anybody else that's had a similar trajectory like us says that, it's a very unpopular answer, right? Because people say, well, wait a minute. So what you're saying is you would do it all over, right? If you were 22 years old or 23 years old and you went back to Europe, you would make that mistake again. Listen, breaking news, fucking life doesn't work that way, right? We're not talking about, there's no do-overs here, right? We are talking today, right? In the very beginning of 2024. Like, we have to talk about today. Like, I don't know. You woke up as Michael Chernow today. How'd that feel?
Fucking awesome.
Thank you. Right? I woke up as Lance fucking Armstrong. And guess what? It was fucking amazing. And I'm going to go to bed as Lance Armstrong. And you're going to go to bed as Michael Chernow. And you're going to go, fucking great day as Michael Chernow. Good night, everybody. So now, is it perfect? No. Is there stuff you're embarrassed about, ashamed about, just stuff you, of course. that's not the point. The point is, what did you learn from that? And how did you get to this point today where tonight you're going to go to bed tonight? Like, night, Michael, you're the fucking best. How did you get to that point, right? Can't change those things. These are all, if it's a piece of art, right? You start with a white canvas, and how did it end up there? How did all of this, this was just a process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, now, if we're sitting here today in 2024, like, fuck, I got to go to bed as Lance again, and I got to wake up as Lance. That's a problem, right? So something, you haven't reconciled something, but, no regrets.
Had to fucking go through it. And I truly believe that the difference between good and great are the ones that are able to walk through the fire.
Yeah.
And, you know, I interviewed a guy who's a pretty awesome entrepreneur. And I asked him, I said, what do you think makes a great entrepreneur?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, what makes a great entrepreneur from a good entrepreneur is the unbelievable amount of stress, pain, and suffering that person is willing to withstand.
Yeah.
In comparison to those that throw in the towel.
Right.
And I think that that is not what makes a great entrepreneur, but I think that is what makes a great human being.
Yeah.
Right? Like, great is very different than good.
Of course.
And the from what I've seen and the people that I've studied, I mean, I'm like falling in love with you, dude, really.
Okay. Well, that's
but I'm just
very
I'm like, you're,
we're,
you know,
we're like kindred spirits.
Yeah, dude. I've really connected with you, and you know, I really do think
I won't
that,
tell your wife.
Okay. Donna, it's all good.
I won't tell Anna.
Just this one time. But you know, I think that there is just this, if you talk to anyone, you know, anyone in a position of that great air, right? Mm-hmm. That rare air that we talked about, there's just way more pain.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, there's way more pain and there's way more things. You know, if you could have gone back and talked to you in 2003.
Yeah. Well, it would have been before that. It would have been 1999. Look, it I was not an easy guy to talk to, whether it was anybody, and there are people in this room who can attest to that.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't talk to me, right? I couldn't have talked to myself. I didn't tap myself on the shoulder. Like, when the shit started to build and I was like, okay, what, you know, I'm so competitive. It didn't matter if we were in a bike race, if we were on a train ride, or we were in a press conference. I was like, you want some of this? You want to ask me a fucking question like that? I'll give you some of this. And then you go, well, whether I tap myself on the shoulder or if there would have been somebody around me to say, dude, I don't think that's a very good idea. Like, can we just say something else, or can you just whatever, just don't do that? I wouldn't have listened to that. I wouldn't listen to myself. I was just go. And it's easy to look back and realize that, you know, just there's a lot of power there that was abused and wasted that I didn't know I had, right? I mean, I didn't know I was sitting in that position. I was just a kid racing a bike, trying to win the bike race. I know now.
I know we got to wrap up. I'd like to finish.
What, do you have a call?
No,
you got a Zoom you got
to get
through?
I thought you had to go somewhere. I'm good. Dude, I'll talk to you for fucking hours. Let's go, baby.
I will tell you a funny story. I connected with this lady the other day, and because I appreciate you saying that sweet thing you just said about me, but I'm not going to say that to you, but I'll give you a similar version of that. So I was talking to that lady that we have in common, and she started talking about you. And I said, you know what? I fucking love that guy. I said, let me say the other day, I'm running around New York City, which already just makes me like crazy. Like I can't do it. It stresses me out, and you're going from one meeting to the next, and you're just trying to be on time, and you have to deliver in these meetings. And then I was so glad. I was like headed to the airport, and you text me, and you're like, dude, if you're free at 2 Eastern, would you mind jumping on the Zoom call with these 15 guys I'm training? And we're doing a Zoom. I don't know what y'all were talking about before, but I got to tell you, because I was on the Zoom, there's not very many people in this world that I would have got on that Zoom for. And we don't even hardly know each other. We're just getting, there was no part. I was like, all right, I'm getting on. Chernow wants me on, I'm on. Like, there's just very few people. And I told this lady that, and she was like, that's the sweetest thing I've heard all day. She did. And I was like, and it's true.
Dude, you have no idea. A, how stoked I was that you did that. I think I wrote you in a text. I was like, dude, I'm going for it. This is a long shot.
Yeah.
But man, if you can hop on anywhere from 2 to 2:45, and then when you popped on there, I was like, oh my God, this guy is the fucking real deal. The guy's the fucking real deal. Yeah. He fucking in a cab in New York City, driving around, not only made my day, but I've already got to meet you. These dudes that were on that call, holy shit. Like, yeah. You just floored him, man.
That was
you
cool.
Just floored him.
That was cool.
After all is said and done, man, you're a great dude. And
yeah, I mean,
I'm sure.
I appreciate that.
You are, dude. You're a great dude. I wouldn't be sitting here if that wasn't the actual truth. And so I feel that way, and I'm sure a lot of people in your life feel that way.
Yeah.
In closing, what do you think? All this stuff, and honestly, man, we didn't even talk about your unbelievable success in investing. Angel investing in your fund, in your venture fund.
Yeah, we'll do that next month.
Yeah.
When you're looking for a guest, you just call me. Like, there's the late night shows, if you're always, they always like, fuck, who are we going to, we need somebody tonight. They're like, I'll call Matt Damon. He's in, whoever, like, they always have someone, I'll be your guy. Like,
okay, you're my guy, dude. All right, we're
little dead spot here. Call LA. He'll come over here.
But you've got your hands in a lot of cool things. You got your hands in a lot of cool things. I mean, dude, just walking me around your house and showing me your art, like, your passion for art is obvious. It's pretty cool to see that. I hope to get to a place where I'm able to walk people through my art gallery. Mm-hmm. what do you think you'd like to share as a parting piece of advice? From all the shit to where you are now.
Yeah. Well, there has been a lot of, yeah. And by the way, look, I mean, it's, I still deal with shit, right? I still deal with, this journey didn't start 52 years ago. It didn't start 11 years ago. I mean, it's kind of, it's just playing out, right? Life is messy. And so you're always having to figure stuff out and try and be better. I think and this is sort of my favorite band in the world is War on Drugs. Do you like the band The War on Drugs?
I've never even heard on The War on Drugs.
Okay.
Just remember, dude. You're the generation above me.
No, but the War on Drugs. Your listeners will know the band. A lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
Or hopefully. You know what? Hopefully some of them know. I'll play some for you. I love the band. It's my favorite band in the world. They're amazing live. It's funny. I tell this story in a lot of talks I give, and the whole, you're not alone. Most people are like, never heard of that band. I'm like, I'm obsessed with this band. But anyways, their music's great. The lyrics are very profound. Some would say dark, but deep and profound and raw. And Adam's the singer. He writes all the songs. And so there's one song where he, it's called Strangest Thing. So the chorus at the end says, be the writer of your own story. I mean, you know this.
Mm.
And the thing about that, it's really two things. Yes, we all want to write our own story. And we don't want anybody else to write our story. We want to write our story. Be the writer of your own story. That's, sorry to get emotional. It's like my fucking anthem. Like, it's my anthem. Because my life has been written, there's 20 different versions, but it's not over, right? And so, and there are days where I'm like, whoa, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like this canvas is perfect, like this Rob Pruitt piece is. There are chapters I'm like, I fucked up that chapter, and I'm in the middle, I might be in the middle of a chapter right now, and I just fucked that part up. But that's okay. You have to continue to write this story, which is your own story. And so I know it's a little heavy to end on, but it's so important to me.
I don't think we can go any further, dude.
Okay.
That was awesome.
I'll play it for you tonight.
I want to hear it. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was awesome. And I really appreciate you just coming on this journey with me and being vulnerable, fucking throwing it out there. And
we got to break it to our wives.
Yeah, we were crying.
You know, here's the thing. Yeah, you
we
know,
were laughing.
Yeah, you know, these guys are running around working out with their shirts off, and oh wait, their wives are both into food and yoga and running. Donna and Anna, you guys go run off, and Michael,
no. We'll be off in the sunset.
No, but it write your own story, man.
Guys, I don't have to say much. I was so intently listening to this podcast, I felt like I was gonna. Like, I felt that there was a chance that I was just going to, like, have to stop it because I was so into it. Literally thinking of myself listening to the podcast. So, the value is unbelievable. I'm sure you enjoyed it as much as I did. Creatures of Habit podcast is something that I fucking love doing. I love doing the podcast.
You're good at it.
Thank you.
You are good at it.
I fucking love doing it. And you guys, I'm talking to you, listening in the car. You guys are the ones that help keep this thing going. It's just that simple. So it would mean the world to me. I'm going to ask you for a favor like I always do. Share this podcast with someone that you think can listen, that would appreciate it. Share it with a friend. Share it with a family member. Share it with a coworker. Share it with a fucking enemy. Share it with someone that you think would appreciate the podcast. And if you're really feeling generous, give me a 5-star rating and a review. And if you don't want to, if you want to write a review and it's not a 5-star rating, save your handwriting. Don't do that. I'm not going to ask you to do that. I appreciate you guys. I fucking love you guys. Yeah. You know where to find Lance Armstrong. You know, Lance Armstrong everywhere. So we don't need to ask him about that.
And there you have it, folks. I hope we delivered some valuable content for you to implement into your life on a daily basis. Please remember that our habits have the power to make us or break us. Replacing bad habits with great ones is the answer to living a life of happiness, optimism, and high performance. We are capable of achieving anything. We all have what it takes to give it all we've got. Commit to one great habit each day and truly commit, and watch how everything in your life starts evolving from good to great. If you enjoyed this podcast, please follow us wherever you listen to your podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. That will help us grow this podcast, bring on more amazing guests, and continue to deliver invaluable content on a weekly basis. Lastly, please share this podcast with any friends or family that you think might appreciate it. And always remember, want plus do equals have. Until the next one, fam, peace.